Good afternoon and welcome to Minnesota Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. Today is Tuesday, February 21, 2023. The time is 12:36 p.m. We have one item on the agenda today, Senate File 168, Senator Morrison. Welcome to the committee, Senator, and your bill is before us. Tell us about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, before you is Senate File 168, which would stop price gouging of prescription drugs and establish a prescription drug affordability board to give the state the ability to limit how much residents pay for certain high-cost drugs. This is an issue we've all heard about from our constituents. While action has been taken to increase drug price transparency and establish an emergency insulin program in Minnesota, the costs of prescription drugs continue to skyrocket in the United States. These prices make it difficult for Minnesotans to afford the medicine they need. Prescription drug price gouging drives up healthcare costs in the entire system, impacts public health, which we all pay for. This policy prohibits price gouging of generic prescription drugs and establishes a prescription drug affordability board similar to those that have now been established in six other states: Maryland, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Maine, and New Hampshire. According to a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association last summer, between 2008 and 2021, median launch prices increased from $2,115 per year to $180,007 per year. The proportion of drugs priced at $150,000 per year increased from 9% in 2008 to 2013 to 47% in 20 to 21. From 2008 to 2021, launch prices for new drugs increased exponentially by 20% per year. Even older drugs that have been on the market a long time are not immune. The cost of insulin tripled between 2002 and 2013, despite no notable changes in formulation. And the three largest price increases reported to Oregon's Prescription Drug Price Transparency Program in 2022 were for generics: a 2,527% increase for a generic of naproxen, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, or NSAID, used to treat pain, and a 597% and 908% increase for two versions of generic isradipine capsules used to treat high blood pressure. The new wholesale acquisition cost price for each of these drugs is now nearly $900 or more. Clearly, more has to be done to address the high cost of prescription drugs and price gouging. So let me give you a brief overview of the bill. The bill prohibits unnecessary and excessive price increases on generic and off-brand drugs and enables our state attorney general to investigate and act when such price hikes occur. The AG can require the manufacturer to repay consumers directly, deposit excess profits in a fund dedicated to drug affordability, and impose financial penalties. The Prescription Drug Affordability Board, established by the bill, is an independent body with statewide authority to evaluate high-cost drugs and set an upper payment limit. When a drug's cost is excessive and prevents an affordability challenge for patients or other payers, including the state. When the board sets an upper price limit, an upper payment limit, it applies to all in-state charges and payer reimbursements for a particular drug, helping consumers, state and local governments, health plan companies, providers, pharmacies, and other stakeholders to manage the challenge of escalating drug prices. The Affordability Board has two longstanding precedents: healthcare rate setting and public service commissions. States regulate insurers and other public goods such as gas, electric, and telecommunications in markets with little or no market competition. And determining upper payment levels for healthcare and other public goods is a state practice that has existed for decades. Upper payment limits build on the standard operating procedures of the existing supply chain, where manufacturers routinely adjust their price concessions through negotiations with providers or the supply chain when payer reimbursement does not cover the product list price. As amended, and I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair, the seven-member board is appointed by the governor with non-voting members of the House and Senate from both the majority and minority party and must have relevant experience in drug pricing and with no conflicts of interest. The bill also establishes an advisory council to provide advice to the board since drug costs involve and affect numerous stakeholders. The advisory council includes drug industry representatives, employers, health plan companies, providers, researchers, consumer advocates, and state government. And I've added several other players in the amendment to the advisory council. This legislation builds off the bipartisan drug price transparency law we passed in 2020, utilizing information reported through transparency rather than requiring additional reporting. And in breaking news, MDH announced its first round of reporting on its MDH prescription drug transparency webpage today. I haven't reviewed it exhaustively yet, but it does reveal that list prices for many prescription drugs are growing significantly faster than the rate of inflation. The author's amendment updates the bill in line with learnings from other states that have begun to implement their boards, adjusting several thresholds to reflect the relevant cost of drugs now and ensure the board is not overburdened with reviews of drugs. It builds on the Inflation Reduction Act, allowing the board to adopt any Medicare negotiated rates as upper payment limits for Minnesota rather than having to duplicate that work. And it ensures the board has access to the expertise and data available through the Department of Health, again, rather than having to duplicate it. The amendment also changes all voting board members to be appointed by the governor, along with two non-voting members from the legislature, to ensure the separation of powers between the legislature and this board with independent administrative authority. This was a change that was made in the House last year per advice of counsel. And in this amendment, I've added two additional non-voting members to be appointed by the minority to ensure balance. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will hand it over to testifiers. But I probably should have moved my A4 amendment.
Members, thank you, Senator Morrison. And members, the A4 amendment is posted online. And yes, Senator Seeberger moves the A4 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted, I should say. So we'll go to testifiers. Senator Morrison, there are 9 testifiers. And I just want to alert the testifiers that the committee and everyone at the Senate today is under time pressure. I'm not going to put you on the clock, but I'm going to ask you to try to keep your comments pointed and to not repeat the comments of previous testifiers. And with that, we will begin with Linda Larson. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Larson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Ms. Larson, before you begin, a quorum is present. Ms. Larson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Linda Larson. I'm a third generation lifelong Minnesotan who grew up on a family farm, and I'm a Minnesota Farmers Union member. Chair Klein and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. And thank you, Senator Morrison, for sponsoring Senate File 168. I speak in support of Senate File 168 on behalf of the members in the Farmers Union, most of whom are family farmers and small businesses in rural communities. Establishing a prescription drug affordability board to stop the unchecked price gouging of prescription drugs will have a huge impact. During the height of the pandemic, I contracted bacterial bronchial pneumonia. It wasn't COVID. Because of the shutdowns, I was unable to make a doctor's appointment, 2 trips to the emergency room, and 6 video appointments over a 7-week period of time, each one of those with a different person. Someone finally found a way to help. They said I should be hospitalized, but there were no available beds. These 2 inhalers opened my airways enough for me to be able to breathe without gasping for air. It took 2 more months before I could walk up or down a stairway without stopping. My throat and lungs are permanently damaged due to the longevity of my illness, and I now have asthma. I will need these 2 inhalers for the rest of my life due to my damaged pulmonary system, and I'm now at risk for developing COPD and/or emphysema. This inhaler is a steroid. My copay at Walgreens Pharmacy for three of them was $411 3 months ago. Last week, the copay for the same three inhalers out of pocket was $616 after insurance. That's a 67% increase in 90 days. According to the pharmacist, when I questioned it, this inhaler for three without insurance now sells for $939 in the United States. But members of the committee, this exact same inhaler in Canada sells outright for $144 for three. That is $795 less than here in Minnesota. I know too many people with too many stories who say that this is unsustainable for themselves and their loved ones. We urge you to pass Senate File 168 and to establish the Prescription Drug Affordability Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And please come to the table, Jessica Intermill, Bill Raker, those two. And members, I know we are trying to get the paper version of the A4 to you, and I apologize for the delay in that. It is available online. Ms. Intermill, please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Chairman Klein, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Intermill, and I am a proud constituent of Majority Leader Zedzik. I'm speaking with you today to urge you to support Senate File 168. My story started about 10 years ago when I was a healthy 31-year-old. My husband and I decided to have children, and 4 weeks into my pregnancy, something happened. My joints started swelling, my fingers started hurting, and every day was a little bit worse until one day I couldn't even make a fist. I was 7 months pregnant when I saw my first rheumatologist, and by then my disease was so bad that he took one look at me from across the room and diagnosed me with rheumatoid arthritis. I went home, I cried, and 22 days later, I delivered our daughter. I have required care every day of the 10 years since. The closest I can come to healthy is to inject myself with biologic medication every week. It's not a cure, there is no cure, but it has stopped my body from eating buckshot-sized holes in my bones. It allows me to be the wife, mom, neighbor, small business person, and citizen that others in my community depend on. But even with insurance, the manufacturer of this drug charges $4,405.71 per month. Almost $150 per day, every single day. And the drug company can and has raised this price over time. I am truly grateful that I have found a medication that can control the symptoms of my disease. But my family needs your help. It just doesn't make sense to allow drug companies to saddle Minnesota families and Minnesota companies with these outrageous costs without asking them to explain why they charge this ransom for our health. Now, you may hear today from folks who are paid to tell you that this bill will hurt patients like me by making the market anti-competitive. That's not true. This market already lacks competition. Medication is not like spaghetti. I can't just pick fettuccine instead. There is not a single other manufacturer who sells this drug in the United States, so of course it gouges consumers. If I don't purchase this drug, my body will once again eat holes into my bones. The inflammation will attack every one of my organs. Consumers can't say no to the drugs they need to live their lives. I can't say no to a drug that is priced four times as much as my mortgage. But you can. You can say no. You can work to pass Senate File 168 and ensure that drug prices are regulated and reasonable so that families like mine can afford our own lives. Thank you for your consideration and support.
Thank you, Ms. Intermill. And Mr. Bill Raker, could you please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony? And Mr. Bob Miller, could you please come to the table?
Good afternoon, Chair Klein and members of the committee. My name is Bill Raker. I am a volunteer with AARP Minnesota. On behalf of our nearly 620,000 members statewide and a coalition of labor, small businesses, farmers, and community organizations, AARP appreciates this opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 168, which establishes a drug affordability review board and prohibits price gouging by drug manufacturers. We want to thank Senator Morrison for bringing this important bill forward. Lowering the cost of prescription drugs is a high priority for AARP. High drug costs hurt everyone, not only those who rely on prescription drugs for their health, but all of us who are paying higher premiums and out-of-pocket costs, as well as the taxpayers who help fund our public programs. Americans have seen their prescription drug prices skyrocket, and they are sick and tired of paying the highest drug prices anywhere in the world critically needed medication. About 30 years ago, the public was outraged over a drug that cost less than $10,000 a year. We now have drugs approaching $1 million a year. A recent survey report from July of 2022 by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services noted that list prices of more than 1,200 prescription drugs rose faster than inflation, an average of 31.6%. So it's hardly surprising that we hear many stories from our members facing serious health and financial consequences due to high prescription drugs. And the reality is that we're often talking about costs that patients will face every year for the rest of their lives. Under Senate File 168, the Affordability Board can review drug prices that pose an affordability challenge and set up upper payment limits that apply throughout the healthcare system to protect consumers, state and local governments, providers, and all stakeholders. And the anti-price gouging will protect consumers from sudden and unreasonable spikes in prescription drug prices. Efforts like these will ensure that consumers can access and afford the medications they need, and it could save tens of millions of dollars for patients, taxpayers, and our healthcare system. On behalf of our members and countless others, we urge lawmakers to pass this bill to rein in high cost of drug prices. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Raker. And as you clear the table, could Mr. Bob Miller and Mr. Jason Plegancool please come to the table? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Miller. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Get my glasses on here quickly. I'm Bob Miller. I live in Prior Lake with my wife, Mary. I'm here because I'm among the nearly 40% of people living with multiple sclerosis who have altered the use of their medications due to cost. When I was diagnosed almost 20 years ago, it started with a tingling in my cheek, and dizziness, and slurred speech, and then I started having trouble with one of my legs. At one point, it got so bad that I was slurring my speech and getting dizzy every 15 minutes. Within a few months, I was prescribed Betaseron, a disease-modifying therapy, or DMT, that is shown to modify the course of MS and prevent the accumulation of disability. Symptoms and prescription therapies vary widely for unpredictable MS, and Betaseron happened to work for me for 12 years. When introduced in 1993, the cost of Betaseron was $11,500 per year. By 2022, it had risen to over $111,000 annually. Median cost for MS DMTs was $94,000 in 2022. When you include generics, it's still over $80,000. Insurance companies often treat generics for specialty drugs just like a specialty drug with higher costs. As I transitioned insurance carriers 7 years ago, I checked to see what my out-of-pocket costs would be. I was told I would pay over $10,000 a year out-of-pocket. I'm on a fixed income, and that amount jeopardizes my retirement security. When I stopped taking Betaseron, my doctors told me I was rolling the dice with my health. Luckily, I have not had a relapse, but I don't know what my future holds. I strongly feel that no one should have to make those kinds of decisions. Medications cannot improve the lives of people if people can't afford to access them. The National MS Society applauds SF-168's intent to bring more transparency, discussion, and attention to the high cost of prescription drugs for people with chronic conditions. We appreciate that Prescription Drug Affordability Act bill utilizes a multi-stakeholder approach in acknowledging the roles of health plans, employers, clinical researchers, drug manufacturers, patients, and others. People with a chronic illness like MS need to know that they'll be able to get the life-changing medication they need when they need it. I urge your support for the Prescription Drug Affordability Act, and I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Miller. And as you clear the table, could Mr. Bentley Graves come forward? Assistant Attorney General Plegancool, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Plegancool. I'm an Assistant Attorney General and Manager of the Consumer Wage and Antitrust Division. Attorney General Ellison regrets that he can't be with you today, but he asked me to testify in his stead in order to voice his strong support for Senate File 168, which takes important steps to combat the high cost Minnesotans pay for prescription drugs. In 2019, the Attorney General convened a task force to study the problem of the high cost of prescription drugs and to make recommendations to tackle this problem. The bipartisan task force ultimately published a 93-page report that not only diagnosed the contributing causes to high drug prices, but also made 14 recommendations to lower the cost of prescription drugs for Minnesotans. Two of the task force's 14 recommendations are embodied in Senate File 168, prohibiting excessive price increases on drugs sold in Minnesota, and establishing a drug affordability board that can investigate cost increases of prescription drugs, publish reports on pricing trends, and where appropriate, set a cap on the amount paid to purchasing drugs that create an affordability challenge to patients in Minnesota. If Senate File 168 is enacted, Minnesota would be, I believe, the eighth state in the country to establish such a board. Unfortunately, excessive price increases of both generic and branded prescription drugs continue to cause affordability challenges to Minnesotans. And just to name two examples that the enactment of Senate File 168 could help address, first, lisinopril is a generic medication used to treat chronic heart failure and hypertension. A manufacturer recently raised the list price of this drug over 500%. Second, Acthar is a branded medication used to treat multiple conditions, including lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. Originally, it was approved by the FDA in 2010 and sold by Sanofi at a list price of $40 per vial. After it was purchased by a subsequent manufacturer, the new owner now sells Acthar for $39,784 per vial. These are not isolated incidents. According to one Federal Health and Human Services report, in 2022 alone, multiple drugs increased their list prices by more than $20,000 or by more than 500%. Enacting Senate File 168 would go a long way in helping Minnesotans combat this problem. The Attorney General's office has an important role to play under the Act. It would enforce its provisions on excessive price increases and violations of upper payment limits set by the board, and it would also advise the board, as it does all other boards in Minnesota. In sum, Senate File 168 goes a long way towards enacting the recommendations Attorney General Ellison's award-winning Drug Price Task Force report made, and would help Minnesotans afford their lives and live with dignity and respect by helping to lower the enormous costs that they bear when purchasing life-saving drugs. And for these reasons, Attorney General Ellison strongly supports Senate File 168, and urges the committee to support its passage. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Assistant Attorney General. Could you remain at the table briefly? We have a member question. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a question for the Assistant Attorney General. You mentioned that there's 8 states that have a similar board, and Mr. Chair and Assistant Attorney General, I was wondering if you could give an example of a drug price that has been lowered by any of those boards.
Attorney General.
Most of those boards are fairly recent and are still being established. I don't know offhand if upper payment limits have been set by any of the boards, but that's something we can certainly look into and respond.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we can get into that discussion later, but because you mentioned the 8 states, just wanted to ask for that example. And then one other follow-up, Mr. Chair, for the Assistant Attorney General. I noticed in the bill for the price gouging language, it only would impact generic drugs, and it's been interesting going through some of the letters and testimony that have largely focused on brand name drugs, you know, being the concern around price gouging. And was wondering, you know, why the language only touches generic drugs and not brand name drugs.
Mr. Attorney General.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that provision exists because there is a Federal Circuit decision that found a similar legislation was preempted by the patent law regime. And so that is why that provision is limited to generic drugs that don't have those same patent restrictions.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just as a follow-up and just for the non-attorneys in the room, you know, for the Assistant Attorney General, that means that the law was found unconstitutional by the courts. Is that correct?
Mr. Assistant Attorney General.
Only as to branded medications that are under patent.
Thank you, and I'll just add that with your example of lisinopril, a generic medication, you said the price had increased by 500% in the last year. Next testifier is Mr. Bentley Graves, and as you clear the table, sir, could Judy Cook come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, we represent more than 6,000 employers across the state, more than 500,000 employees in every industry, every corner of the state, every size of business. We work on healthcare issues because of the significant cost consideration healthcare is for our employer members and their employees. And so, not surprisingly, there's, you know, when it comes to this issue, there's a lot of agreement that that we'd like to see more done to lower the cost of healthcare. Having said that, however, I'm here to kind of raise some concerns from our private sector members about this particular approach. You know, we representing private businesses in the private market do have concerns about an approach like this that would have an unelected body from the state government setting prices in the private marketplace for drugs privately produced. You will hear, I think, probably after me, some concerns from folks from the industry, and we certainly share those concerns, but the bigger concern of ours is the precedent that this would set. And so while we, again, I think want to be involved in this conversation going forward about how to bring relief from high costs of drugs for people in Minnesota, this is an approach that we can't support, but have had this conversation with Senator Morrison and her counterpart in the other body, and we'll continue to look for ways to find a way forward on this important issue. But I appreciate the opportunity to share those kind of brief thoughts today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Ms. Judy Cook, and could Christina Moorhead also come to the table, please? Welcome to the committee. Ms. Cook, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Judy Cook on behalf of the Association for Accessible Medicines. Representing the generic and biosimilar manufacturers, AAM is opposed to Senate File 168. This bill does not address the cost drivers in the prescription drug marketplace, particularly the generic drug price gouging portion. Generics are the truly competitive market in terms of prescription drugs. And the first section of the bill applies only to low-cost generic drugs, not high-priced brands. This is misplaced. Generics and biosimilar medicines save patients money at 91% of prescriptions filled, but only 18% of drug spending, and only 2% of total healthcare spending. Generic drugs are typically 70 to 80% lower cost than the brand. Also, the recently, just this morning, a report that came out in their drug transparency report out of this of 698 drugs with expected price increase reports, only 9 were generics, which was 1.29%. This bill allows the Attorney General and private individuals to sue a generic company when the WAC, the wholesale acquisition cost, not the patient cost, increases by $30 or $1 per day. But no suit will be filed for a brand drug that is increased by thousands of dollars a month. What's important to understand is that generic drugs are the competitive marketplace, sold to wholesalers at a national level and usually outside of Minnesota. The WAC is not the price the wholesaler pays. That's negotiated and typically lower than the WAC, which you may want to think of as your, you know, manufacturer's list price. The WAC also varies throughout the year. It can change up or down frequently. So is the 15% increase in the bill one time over the course of the year or something else? And nothing in the bill requires that a Minnesota consumer paid an increased price at the pharmacy as a result of a WAC increase for one generic manufacturer. And if the chair will indulge me, I can answer your question about the 500%, if you'll allow me. So there are multiple generics in the marketplace. So you may have one manufacturer that increases the price, perhaps as they're exiting the market, but that doesn't mean a wholesaler purchased it at that price because there are others on the market. So the wholesaler will purchase the lower cost generic. And so perhaps no Minnesota consumer ever paid that higher price. The example today is Rapidine. Prices at the pharmacy now are available at $108, and I'm looking for my notes. I have more examples I can give you. Lisinopril, the average retail price right now is $1.13. So, and that's why I think it's important for the Commerce Committee to understand that generic drug pricing is so different from how brands work. Once sold by the generic manufacturer, it is the wholesaler who determines which generic manufacturer's products are sold to Minnesota pharmacies. In most instances, the generic manufacturer's portion of the transaction does not occur in the state, and it is not the generic manufacturer who determines what patient out-of-pocket costs are. Further, the entities downstream that increase the price consumers pay at the pharmacy in this bill cannot be sued. So regardless of where a price increase occurs, only a generic manufacturer can be sued because of the exemption in the bill for the parties and subsequent sales. A federal court has already found a similar law unconstitutional, but the fundamental question is, why are you targeting generic drugs? We are told there's a court case, as the Attorney General just mentioned, but we know you regulate brand drugs in other ways. This was originally part of the Attorney General's Drug Price Task Force, as the AG mentioned, but it was not for generics only. There is also a provision in the bill that prohibits the withdrawal of a generic drug from the state without 90-day notice. But it's the wholesaler who sells drugs to pharmacies, so we don't know whether our drug is going to be sold in Minnesota or not. The manufacturer has no control. Further, if a generic manufacturer discontinues making a drug, which happens often, it's unclear if the threshold applies or generic manufacturers have to report to the Board of Pharmacy and Attorney General every time a drug is discontinued for all generic drugs because of the possibility they may increase their prices in a way that triggers the law. So we don't really understand that provision. And as I said earlier, none of the examples used so far justify the generic drug price gouging provision would actually be covered by this law. So why does AAM care? We care because only generic manufacturers will still have to respond to the inquiries and lawsuits to prove that it's not warranted. This does not help reduce consumer drug prices. Again, we believe that the focus in the first part of the bill on generic drugs is misplaced and provides false hope to consumers that you are doing something to bring drug prices down. There's a letter from AAM in your packet, and we do look forward to continuing to work with Senator Morrison. We've had a number of conversations. Appreciate adding a generic manufacturer to the board, to the advisory council, and we'll continue to work with the author, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. And as you clear the table, could Peter Nelson come forward? Ms. Christina Moorhead, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Klein and members of the committee. My name is Christina Moorhead, and I'm here on behalf of Pharma, representing the innovative biopharmaceutical or brand drug research companies. We agree that too many patients are struggling to afford or access the medicines that they need. However, we disagree that the Prescription Drug Affordability Board is the solution. I've included a handout today with the proposed policy solutions that we think would better help patients. If there's time, I would be happy to discuss those. So House File 17 establishes a Prescription Drug Affordability Board whose purpose is to, one, review drug manufacturer data provided to the state as part of the Prescription Drug Price Transparency Act, identify prescription drugs for cost reviews, and then set an upper payment limit or price for certain prescription drugs. And while this sounds simple in concept, there are a number of issues with this legislation that warrant discussion. I will discuss a few of those in my testimony today, and we've also provided the committee with a longer statement that includes legal issues and also issues that states are facing who are trying to implement similar legislation. So House File 17 is establishing a Prescription Drug Affordability Board to review prescription drug data that drug manufacturers submit to the state as part of the Transparency Act. Our drug manufacturers have done this since February of 2022. This data was not available for review until 11:30 a.m. this morning. And so we have concerns that this data has not been fully vetted to know if this data is even useful for a Prescription Drug Affordability Board. I have not had time to fully review the report yet. I was able to read some of the highlights and the limitations that the Minnesota Department of Health noted in the report. I'd like to read some of those. Quote, the focus is on list price instead of net prices and therefore does not represent the actual income manufacturers earn from the sale of their products. In fact, research from the Berkeley Research Group shows that brand drug manufacturers keep just 49.5 cents of every $1 spent on a brand medicine. Second quote, the focus is only on manufacturers rather than on the full supply chain. Other downstream entities like pharmacy benefit managers, wholesalers, pharmacies, and payers also contribute to the final price paid by consumers. Pharmacy benefit managers and health plans, they do a really good job negotiating discounts from our brand drug manufacturers that total to $236 billion in 2021. The issue is that PBMs and health insurers often keep those discounts and require patients to pay the full price of their medicine instead of discounting their drugs. And final quote, reporting requirements treat drug pricing as if there is one market functioning under a single set of practices, which does not reflect the complex factors such as incentives, economic environments, and business arrangements driving pricing and rebate practices. So I would urge this committee to consider delaying implementation of the board until we have a full understanding of the Minnesota Department of Health's findings from this transparency information. You've also heard testimony today about patients struggling to afford medicines and also having access to their medicines. However, this bill does not guarantee that patients will pay the upper payment limit for their medication. This is because the patient's health plan sets the cost-sharing amount for a prescription drug, which Senate File 168 does not tie to the upper payment limit. This means that if Senate File 168 were to be enacted, patients may save nothing at the pharmacy counter. And finally, please understand that House File 17 is about provider billing and payer reimbursement by setting the amount a provider can bill at the upper payment limit and the amount a payer can reimburse at the upper payment limit, with some exemptions for ERISA and Medicare plans. The bill does not set the original price of a prescription drug is sold for, which presents a number of supply chain issues, including if a provider can even purchase the drug at or below the upper payment limit. So Chairman Klein, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer questions.
Could you remain at the table? We have a question from Senator Frantz. Ms. Moorhead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Morrison, for bringing this forward. I want to thank all the testifiers, particularly Mr. Graves, Ms. Cook. You know, you have credibility here in the committee. Ms. Moorhead, my question is for you. You said full understanding. I've been watching this issue for a decade, and most Minnesotans don't have a full understanding of why a price would go up 500% or $20,000. I thought I heard your testimony that the manufacturers may keep 49 cents out of a dollar. I appreciate that candor. That compares quite favorably to some of our other industries. And I'm a business owner and a capitalist. I just wonder, for full understanding, why do Minnesotans see these dramatic price increases? What is going on for that manufacturer at that price? I encourage you to use candor in that answer, because that's what most people are asking. And when they see those price increases, that's why they're talking to legislators like Senator Morrison saying, you've got to do something. So what can you tell us about why these spikes go up? I'm under the assumption that it's not a dramatic increase that fiscal year in research and development costs or the supply chain costs or the raw ingredients in the medication. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just seeing if we can get a full understanding.
Ms. Moorhead.
Chairman Klein and Senator, so we saw in 2021 that net prices of prescription drugs on average went up by just 1%. We know that patients are not experiencing that at the pharmacy counter. For these are really patients who usually have high deductible health plans and are paying either co-insurance or they're in their deductible phase. And what is happening with prescription medicines that is different than other areas of healthcare is that PBMs and health plans may often keep these rebates and discounts. They may apply that to the premiums to lower costs for everyone. They may keep it as profit. But for chronic care patients who are needing prescription drugs every single day of their lives, they may be paying full price of their medicines and paying the instead of paying the net price of their medicines. In our policy solutions document, we list one as ensuring that patients benefit from those rebates and discounts, just like they do when they see their doctor or hospital. You get your explanation of benefit, you see a high price here, then there's a discount, and you pay based on the difference. That would be a policy that we advocate to help patients at the pharmacy counter.
Senator Frantz, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms. Moorhead. I guess I would say when the average Minnesotan understands that to mean that they're not seeing a big price increase, they'll stop asking us, what are you going to do about drug prices? I appreciate your answer. I think that's why we're in this spot, is because people see those increases and they compare that to what they think they see in other countries who have boards who operate sometimes in this fashion. So just throwing it out there that I think your best avenue to see what you and your members want is to get it into the mind of the average Minnesotan. Here's what's really going on and here's what you can do to stop it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Frantz, and thank you, Ms. Moorhead. Thank you to the pharmaceutical industry for coming to answer the questions of this committee. Mr. Peter Nelson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Nelson, and I'm a senior policy fellow at Center of the American Experiment. And I think we're all here, of course, because we understand that healthcare costs too much in this country, and it's quite appropriate for you to be working on policies to lower the costs across the board, and that includes with drugs. However, I do not believe that the drug price controls in this bill are the right approach. I think there's some other things we should be considering to lower the price of drugs, and because these drug price controls will lead to many of the unintended consequences that we see from other price controls, for example, rent controls. And those are shortages, those are also lower quality, less innovation, and fewer new products. And we've had this discussion at the federal level with the Inflation Reduction Act, and the Congressional Budget Office agrees, and pretty much everyone agrees that we're gonna see fewer new products, fewer new drugs that will potentially save lives and enhance lives moving forward with this sort of approach. And we've heard from patients who are struggling with affordability issues today, and they are experiencing real issues that we should be looking to address. However, I want you to consider some other people who really can't be here today to give testimony. And in particular, think about loved ones that you've lost who really don't have the chance to be here because they didn't have access to a drug that would have otherwise saved their life because it hasn't been developed yet. For me, that's my father. My father died 20 years ago from a glioblastoma brain tumor. And I looked at the Brain Cancer Society website this morning, and one of the facts they hold out there is that there's only 5 drugs that have been approved by the FDA to treat this, and of course, they're not curing it. And there's all sorts of drugs out there. There's also all sorts of people like me who have lost a loved one. I expect most everyone here has lost a loved one because there wasn't a drug available. And this is the sort of policy that I see going in the wrong direction because it makes it harder for drug companies to invest in those new products. And I also want to mention a couple other things that I don't think we hear that much. There's things that drug companies can do to mitigate the issues here. We will likely see higher launch prices in anticipation of the drug price controls because it focuses on the increases. They're going to be able to modify their launch prices in the future. And we've heard a lot about list prices. That, of course, doesn't apply to rebates. And so moving forward, talking about some solutions, there are bills in the state legislature right now moving to try to require rebates to be passed through to the consumer at the pharmacy. Those are things you should be considering. And I also, from 2017 to 2021, worked for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I was leading the efforts to require price transparency on health plans and hospitals. And price transparency is something you all need to consider very strongly. And there's lots of things you can do to increase price transparency on drug companies. I fought against the drug companies to get that accomplished. And it's an important tool, but it's not moving forward fast enough. And there's lots of things you guys can do to make that move faster. And we're seeing bills move through the House that are doing that. I think there's some bills here in the Senate that have been proposed, but not had a hearing yet. You should be looking at those price transparency bills, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. And that is our last testifier. I believe we will go now to member amendments. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A7 amendment, and I'm happy to describe it.
Senator Rasmussen moves the A7, and it is not in our packets. Please describe the amendment while it is distributed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment is fairly simple. There's a couple places in the bill where there is severability language, and we simply, in the amendment, would change the severability language to non-severability. And the logic behind this amendment, Mr. Chair and committee members, there have been a lot of questions raised about these types of schemes and their constitutionality. You know, can the state of Minnesota effectively dictate pricing to other market players? Typically, the courts have found that this type of power is reserved for Congress and has to be dealt with at the federal level. And so the amendment before the committee does not change any of the content of either the generic price gouging language or that of the price setting board. However, it would make sure that if a court did find any part of this law to be unconstitutional, that we would have to come back as a legislature and fix it ourselves. Because, Mr. Chair and members, I don't think it's good policy to have a bill that we have questions on its constitutionality and then let some court rewrite that law for Minnesotans.
Senator Morrison, do you have the A7 in front of you?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Response.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rasmussen. I guess I would say that I think that we wouldn't want to hamstring our ability to use part of the law. If part of the law was found unconstitutional, then we stop using that. But I wouldn't want it to hamstring our ability to use the other part of the law. So I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just add, you know, and this is something we can get into in the general discussion. It's my understanding that there isn't a single drug in the United States of America that has been lowered. The price has been lowered because of a law like this. There are other states that have set up this type of construct, but either through legal challenges or other delays, we actually haven't seen any of these work in any other states. And so I think if Minnesota is going to be the first mover in trying to have the state dictate pricing in a way that raises some constitutional issues, this would be a simple safety guard that we can have where if a court finds any part of this law to be unconstitutional, we have to come back and fix it. So I'd ask for members' support.
Other comments on the A7? All those in favor of the A7 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
Nay.
The A7 is not adopted. Other motion amendments. We'll go then to member comments and questions for the author or testifiers. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. And Senator Morrison, you know, this, as you know and have been working on, is a very complicated bill, a complicated topic, and just the whole how drug pricing works and how it affects everyday Minnesotans has a lot of complexity to it. And one of the concerns that I have, and I'm actually going to be talking about a letter here that I got from the president of the Minnesota Society of Clinical Oncology, and then also from the board chair for the Association of Clinical Oncology. And these are two cancer doctors who have talked about how this bill, and just to quote out of their letter, you know, they're concerned this bill would jeopardize access to necessary care for Minnesota patients with cancer. And we've seen, and Senator Frentz referenced, that other countries have these types of boards, the you know, United Kingdom being one of them, where they dictate the price that they'll reimburse to pharma. And unfortunately, we have seen in many instances that certain treatments, certain drugs are not available. There are cancer drugs that are available here in the United States that are not available in those countries because those pharmaceutical companies will say, well, at that price, I'm not going to sell into that market. And so I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if the bill author could address that concern that we're hearing from cancer doctors that if this were to go into place, they might not be able to have access to life-saving treatment for their patients.
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rasmussen, I could not agree with you more that the complexity of our pharmaceutical situation is excessive. And I think one of the challenges is it seems to be there's a lot of finger pointing. You'll notice in the testimony today, it's not us, it's them. And part of the challenge is it's working. Our system works for a lot of stakeholders. There are a lot of people making a lot of money off of the system that we have. It's not working very well for patients. And so we need to try different approaches. We need to figure out ways to make these medicines affordable for people. And in terms of, the pharmaceutical industry is the most profitable industry. So perhaps and there's never been evidence that would suggest that decreasing prices would stifle innovation, certainly not at the profit margin that was cited today. And so there's also never been evidence that this would decrease access to medicines because of the complexity of the supply chain issues. And one other comment, too, about the upper payment limits. This is new legislation. Obviously, there is interest across the country for trying to figure this out because there is growing impatience about the high cost of prescription drugs. And so many states are trying this legislation. We don't know yet because both Colorado and Maryland are just about to come out with their first upper payment limits. This is new legislation, and to say that it doesn't work, I think is not true. We don't know yet.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the response, Senator Morrison. And I would actually agree with you that we don't know yet, and we don't know what impact this is going to have on Minnesotans, on healthcare providers, and most importantly, as you've pointed out, on patients. And we have seen in other countries that have set up a similar type system. I'll give the example in the United Kingdom. One of the drug makers was Eli Lilly, and they pulled out of UK, out of the UK market because of what their national health system was pushing in terms of pricing. And so my question, Mr. Chair, for the bill author is, if there were a pharmaceutical company or another market player that said, Minnesota has set an upper payment limit on a certain drug and they were unwilling to sell into the market, Minnesota, we're 2% of the U.S. population. I think, the international pharmaceutical companies could afford not to sell into Minnesota. What would happen? What would happen to that patient or those doctors if those companies weren't willing to sell into Minnesota?
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rasmussen, I think the chance of that happening is very unlikely given the complexity of the supply chain issues that I just mentioned.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a follow-up, I know, Senator Morrison, this is an issue that you have devoted a lot of personal energy and thought into on rare diseases. And I know this has been talked about in other states that have brought forward these types of board about having an exemption around rare diseases, just given the difficulty and the cost of oftentimes getting those therapeutics to market. And so I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if the bill author would address that, and would you consider an exemption for rare diseases in your bill?
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rasmussen. And you're right, the rare disease community is an important one, and they have very specific needs. Each individual rare disease is rare, but as a community, it's a lot of people who are impacted by these challenging diseases where they're often it's 7 or 8 years to diagnosis. It's very hard to find experts in the disease. And the medications to treat them are very expensive. I've been in conversation with some drug manufacturers, specifically of some medicines to treat rare diseases. And I've added, you may have noticed, I added a member from the Rare Disease Advisory Council to the advisory council in the bill, because I think that's an important voice. This is the bill's first stop. And I am open to that conversation, but that hasn't been done yet.
Other member questions or comments? Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Just a couple of questions. The first one has to do with on page 6. It talks about the Prescription Drug Affordability Board.
Is this in the amendment, Senator Duckworth?
Yes, I believe so. A4, page 6, subdivision 2, and it talks about membership. And under numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, it talks about one non-voting member appointed by respective majority and minority leaders of both the House and the Senate. So I'm just curious as to why, you know, whoever happens to be the governor gets to appoint seven voting members, and then the legislature gets to have folks appointed to that board that do not have the ability to vote.
And Senator Morrison, I think this bill will also be going to state government at some point where that could be pieced out more directly, but your response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Duckworth. Great question. In the original bill that was introduced before, they were voting members, but and maybe I'll defer to the Assistant Attorney General on this, but I believe there's a constitutionality issue with having people from the legislators making decisions around executive branch decisions. So that had to be changed. But I thought you'd like that I added a minority voice, two minority voices.
Senator Duckworth.
I would make a joke, but I won't. But I appreciate the humor. But I will say, as a member of the legislature, whether or not we potentially would be encroaching upon the executive, I'm also very concerned of the opposite happening, which would be the executive potentially subsuming or wading into the role of the legislature. And that's where the question comes from. I'll move on to another, if that's okay. Page 2 talks about a requirement of these manufacturing companies to have an agent and an office in the state of Minnesota. And I'm wondering why that's a requirement and about how many folks we might think that would actually apply to and how that would change business for them potentially.
Specific lines being referenced are 217 and 218. Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Duckworth. I would ask the Assistant Attorney General to respond to that question.
And Senator, do you have a copy of the amendment with you? If not, could the pages please give one?
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Assistant Attorney General.
My understanding is that provision is very limited cost. I have it, I think. Thank you. It's intended to allow to have an agent in place in Minnesota so that if someone does need to be investigated, service can happen, and there's a point of contact for our office to investigate and be able to affect service. And so it's my understanding it's very low cost. Lots of companies have registered agents that they employ and have available in state.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a brief follow-up then. And I'm not well versed in the jurisdiction of the Attorney General's office. I'm not an attorney. And so in order for the AG's office to be able to potentially investigate or do what they otherwise determine they might need to do if something like this was going on, a manufacturer would have to have a physical location or a physical office in the state. Am I understanding that correctly?
Assistant Attorney General.
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, that's not accurate. It's just to basically ease the process and make it streamlined so that we know who to serve and there's someone in state to serve if we need to reach out to investigate something.
Gotcha.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I don't have a background in anything that has to do with pharmaceuticals or drug-related stuff, so I apologize if some of my questions seem pretty naive, but I'm going to ask them anyway. You know, here in Minnesota, are we trying to encourage innovation, investment, and the maximum array of drugs possible for the people of Minnesota?
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Duckworth, I would assume so.
Okay. As I page through this bill, I guess the best way I could describe it or the question I would have about it in its general terms is it essentially the government mandating what a private business can or can't charge for its product?
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Duckworth, it is a collaborative effort to make prescription drugs affordable to the people who need them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Duckworth.
I think that's a very noble and worthy endeavor. And my concerns regarding some of this bill are that it may have the opposite unintended consequence of doing just that. A follow-up I would have is on page 4, lines 4.12 to 4.14 talk about a manufacturer being prohibited from withdrawing drugs from sale or distribution in the state. So I'm just wondering why that language is included in this bill.
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Duckworth, I think that's comfort language. I think that's, as we've discussed earlier, that that's very unlikely to happen. But it's further incentive for that not to happen, I suppose.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Duckworth.
Well, I don't know who that would be comfort language for. Certainly probably not the manufacturer. So the fact that that language is in here leads me to believe that we think this law likely has the potential to de-incentivize manufacturers from operating in Minnesota or providing their drugs for sale to Minnesotans. And regardless of industry, I think it's fairly true that the fewer options there are, the worse that is for the consumer, and the likelihood that has to potentially increase costs overall. And that's what I'm worried that some aspects of this bill have the potential to do. The less freedom and flexibility we give, or I should say the more regulation that we provide to include requiring folks to have an office in the state so it's easier to potentially sue them, I think would give a lot of these businesses cause for pause as to whether or not they're going to do business in the state of Minnesota. And I think that would be the worst possible thing for our citizens when they're trying to drive those prices down as much as possible. I do have one more question, Mr. Chair.
It's Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's on page 11, lines 11.8 to 11.9. And this is under a section that talks about drug price information, decision to conduct cost review. And it talks about, I guess, various drugs or situations that might require review. But these lines specifically say the board shall make available to the public the names and related price information of the prescription drug products identified under this subdivision. Now, I'm wondering what the purpose or the intent is behind this language in the bill.
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair, I'm reading it. Mr. Chair and Senator Duckworth, I assume that's a matter of transparency so the public is aware of what drugs are being reviewed.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answer. I guess that just further causes me to have some concern regarding this bill. It's essentially telling businesses, potentially, if we don't agree with how you're pricing your product, we're going to publicly shame you and throw information out there online to the public, further disincentivizing folks to potentially do business in the state. And so, obviously, whatever we can do to drive prices down and keep them affordable is in the best interest of everyone. But I'm somewhat fearful and concerned that some aspects of this bill will have the opposite impact. And that's why I share my comments. That's all I've got, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. And I will just, as a chair, respond briefly to the last comment, which is that the parameters that would trigger an investigation under this bill are publicly stated within the bill itself and would be available to the manufacturer as well. So before they were publicly shamed, I guess, in your words, they would have realized they were crossing this trigger value and subjecting themselves to an investigation. Senator Morrison, any response?
You said it well, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the comments and the concerns, Senator Duckworth. I think there's ample evidence that shaming hasn't been effective in this arena. You'll recall the story of Alex Smith, the young man who died when he was 26 years old because he had to ration the insulin he needed to live. When we were able to enact the Alex Smith Emergency Insulin Plan here in Minnesota, the pharmaceutical industry sued. So there's a lot of evidence that there's not a lot of shame and that they will fight any potential pharmaceutical reform. So I don't think that means that we shouldn't act. I think federal action would be ideal, but while there's sclerosis and gridlock in Washington, there is a lot of appetite at the state level to try to find solutions to these problems.
Senator Deames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Morrison. As we've had the discussion here today, there's a lot of concern about if this bill is actually going to work. So my question is, we do all of these things, we get everything in place, and we do not see the price of the drugs come down because we miss the issue. What's the next step going to be?
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Dames. You know, I think we have a real opportunity here as we start to get this information that the Drug Price Transparency Act is all gathering for us to build on that to improve craft and improve legislation. I think the information we get from that can inform the work of this board. But certainly if we get to a point in a few or several years where the cost of drugs has not come down, we'll need to reevaluate.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Friends.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Morrison. Just an observation, members, that it's not just a question of whether drug prices would come down, but whether they would stop going up at the rate they're going up. And I think the average Minnesotan would say, I might be happy to just find out that the price increases are less. And I hope that that's one of the goals of some of the talks that we're having here. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Morrison, is there, out of those eight states that have enacted this, do we know if any manufacturers of generic drugs have pulled out of those states?
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, I am not aware of that, no. And again, I think that's very unlikely given the way the supply chain works. But as I said earlier, Colorado and Maryland are just bringing out their upper payment limits now, so we don't know yet.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess I'm going to go back to some of the concerns that were already previously raised. Because if you can't pull out once this becomes enacted, and I would have to believe this comes, I didn't see an effective date, but I would have to believe then it's August 1 of this year. If they don't pull out by August 1 of this year, they would be, and they try to pull out, they'd be looking at a penalty of $500,000. So I'm thinking that if they're going to pull out, they're going to pull out before this bill becomes active. My concern is, so I would have to believe that it's going to have to be a relatively quick response if this actually becomes law, because there doesn't look like there's an effective date anywhere in the bill that I can find, except for some appropriations. But I believe it would be effective on 1 August. And if they don't pull out, they're going to be, and they do decide to pull out, it's a $500,000 penalty. So the way I see it, if some of these folks are going to have this effect really quick, the way I see it.
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, I do see your point, but I think based on the experience we've had with these prescription drug affordability boards in the other states, that has not happened, and they have been enacted, so there was no mass exodus from those states.
Senator Hall.
And so all eight states have that same provision that they have to have that the office in there, or they're subject to that? So that the, are we saying that our bill is the same as all the other eight states? That's what I hear.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, no, they are not all exactly the same. Our bill is similar to the Colorado language, though.
Well, thank you, Senator Morrison. And unless there are further questions or comments, a couple closing comments from the chair. Senator Wicklund, apologies.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure if we were getting to the closing comment period or not. I just wanted to make a comment. I don't have questions right now, but I have been a supporter and author of the Prescription Drug Affordability Board language in the past, and I'm glad that you're bringing it forward. I'm glad we're having a discussion about that. To me, it seems like it's a way that we can bring a group of people together to do the analysis that's needed to understand, you know, how the drug prices are functioning and apply their knowledge to whether these increases that we're seeing are really justified or appropriate. And so I really think it's a good thing that we're bringing this forward to try try and address this issue because it is such an important issue for Minnesotans. And I am looking forward to learning more about the data that we see through the price transparency work. And since that's just become available, I hope that, you know, as you're moving forward with the bill, I hope that we can maybe take some information from that to help us understand better, you know, how the Drug Affordability Board might utilize that information. And just looking at it on my phone, it's a little challenging to assess, you know, what the information is. But I hope that we can have more discussion about that as the bill moves forward. So thank you.
Senator Morrison, I'll let you give some closing comments, but I just have a couple of comments on my own. First of all, I'm really grateful to you for putting your arms around this very complex issue, very difficult issue, but what clearly is a necessary issue for Minnesotans today. And I'm actually sincere in my thanks to the pharmaceutical industry for coming forward today, fielding our questions, and trying to work with the author on solutions. You know, people like me and Senator Morrison owe a great debt of gratitude, honestly, as do all Minnesotans, to the pharmaceutical industry. Some of the miracle drugs that were brought up today, these biologics, when we got out of medical school, you would just throw up your arms and watch somebody get sicker by the day. And now we can turn someone around in the span of 48 hours from a very critical chronic illness. There are innovations during COVID, both in vaccines and in therapeutics, are the reason that we're all sitting at close quarters here today without masks on. So society owes that industry and their innovative powers a great debt of gratitude. Having said that, once those medications are invented and on the market, we have this moral obligation as a society to make sure that they are available to all Minnesotans and that price is not a barrier. It was ironic to hear people say today that this bill could cause, you know, a crisis in drug availability. Well, we've been living in an ongoing crisis of drug availability and tolerating it for the last 20 years. Ms. Larson testified that the copay on her inhalers, simple bronchodilator inhalers to keep her airways open, was over $400. It's not a stretch to imagine how many Minnesotans see that bill and decline to go get the medication and have long-lasting morbidity related to that. So I appreciate that this is an attempt at a solution. I appreciate that states are finding their way through this and that this bill may not be perfect at the end of the day, but we need to do something as a legislature, and I'm grateful for your efforts. With that, I'll give you the opportunity for any closing comments before we go to a vote.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo your comments about the pharmaceutical industry. This is not an attack on that industry because you're right, they have created miraculous drugs. But pharmaceutical medicines are different than TVs or cell phones. When people need the product to live, it's a very different kind of a commodity. So I echo your comments about that. I'm grateful to the thoughtful questions and discussion. I'm grateful to pharma and the generics and the rare disease community who have spoken with me. I'm looking forward to improving the legislation as it goes through the committee process. I particularly want to thank the testifiers who came and spoke today. It's not easy to come here and share your very personal healthcare story. So I'm grateful to all of you for doing that. Thank you. The personal stories are important and brings us back to why we're here, which is to make sure that people can access the medicines they need to survive and thrive, because medicines don't work if you can't afford them. So thank you for your consideration, committee and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Morrison. And now the question is on the motion of Senator Wicklund that Senate File 168, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails. Senate File 168, as amended, is recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. Thank you, Senator Morrison. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Morrison. Thank you.